December, getting to the end of the year. Should I reflect on things? No. I want to start with something that sounds good, and I don't have anything. Let's just start. The Labor Ministry in Japan wants companies to stop forcing employees to buy their own products, the products they sell, to hit sales quotas. This is a very weird thing. I guess it's not weird. It makes sense. If you're given a sales quota and you have to meet it, and that's what your, you know, evaluation, your bonus or whatever is going to be reliant on, you're going to want to hit it. So companies then turn around and go like, well, you're an employee. You have X amount of money because we pay you. So we know you have that much money and you love our product. So you have to buy so much of our product. This is a problem because often it's too much product or it's a product you don't need or want. Like if I worked for a car company, I would only be able to buy so many cars a year that I could use. So they're taking it to the next level. This could be anything, any product at all, drugs. They do mention insurance companies and stuff. Like how much insurance do I need to secure my future? So companies force employees to buy the product they're selling so that they can hit these sales quotas. So they can say they hit these sales quotas so they can look good to investors who probably aren't buying the product, if we're being very honest. This is going to be defined as a form of power harassment because you have someone in a position of authority forcing you to buy a product you may not necessarily want. Like maybe I do like our product. Maybe I believe in our product, but I've already bought one today, or I already have one enough for my life. There is no reason for me to buy more. Forcing me to buy more is a form of power harassment. That's how it's going to be defined going forward in Japan. I think it'll be interesting because it's going to get its own name. All the forms of harassment, really 90% of them, could just be called power harassment, or just let's just get rid of the first word and just call it harassment. But I think putting labels on it makes people understand what's going on a lot faster. So it helps a lot. So this is going to need its own form of power harassment. So I haven't been able to come up with a name myself. I think that would be an interest. We should run a contest. I would like to do more interactive things. I did the quizzes. I would like to keep doing those, but lately it's been very hard for me to organize because I've just been very busy on my day off, my extra day. So organizing someone to join the podcast has been very difficult. Yeah, contests would be interesting as well. What would you call the form of harassment of your company making you buy your own product, not because you want the product, but in order for you to hit a sales goal, your company, not necessarily you? If I got the bonus of hitting my own sales goal, maybe it would be worth it for me to buy my own product. But that's probably not how it works. It's probably like the lower level employees who don't get big bonuses, don't get any like sort of profit from this. And they're like, you have to buy X amount of stuff out of your own salary. We're not going to like compensate you for that, so that the company hits its quota. Brings up the interesting topic of quotas and whether they're good or bad, because it's the company's view as a way to measure something, but not take into account reality of the circumstances of why you might not hit that quota. It's certainly a problem with like police and whatnot when they have a quota of how many like traffic tickets they have to give. And so at the beginning of month, they give out more traffic tickets. And then at the later of the month, so they've fulfilled their quota and then they don't have to worry about it. They can be more sort of egalitarian or more pleasant to everyone going forward and actually make decisions on whether this merits a ticket or not, instead of trying to fulfill their quotas. Some of the examples given in the articles were contracts for car insurance. So that's the car insurance. So I have a car. I need a insurance. I don't need more than one or two, three plans of insurance on my car. I just need the one to cover my car. Maybe there's a couple different kinds of insurance I could get, but I don't necessarily need, want, or be able to afford that. So that's where the problem starts to arise. Unsold Christmas cakes. So you have a company that produces Christmas cakes. They made too many. They got too many orders and a bunch of orders were canceled. So they don't want those to go to waste. They want to make sure they sell 100% of their Christmas cakes. You work at the bakery. I assume it's actually more of a factory. You work at the factory and they're like, we're not going to give you these Christmas cakes. You have to buy these Christmas cakes. I'm assuming there is a somewhat of a discount, but I actually can't say that's true. The article doesn't say that. Now I'm assuming they're going to take some of the profit. See, then as soon as that sentence comes out of my mouth, they're going to take some of the profits off the top. No, they're not. They're going to profit off you as an employee just as much as they would off any consumer. So yeah, you're screwed. You have to buy your crappy Christmas cake that you didn't want to buy in the first place. And let's say you did even like Christmas cake. You're a fan of the product you make as Christmas cakes. How many are you going to buy? Like, that's insane. Like, I don't want 5 or 6 Christmas cakes sitting around my house. This was the one I found interesting. Cover wrongly taken orders at restaurants. So you're a server of some sort. You take an order And then you bring the order to the table and they say this is wrong in some way. So that has to be taken back. They have to remake the order or something and they have to replace the order and bring it back a new one. They're saying that you have to pay for the order that was taken incorrectly. Now, you may bear some responsibility, but there is actually the case of a lot of internet stories of someone ordering something and then just sending it back because that's what they do. So should the employee be on the hook for that? I actually disagree with that as well. I don't think the customer should have that much power over someone's paycheck. And that's always the problem, is because they don't have tipping culture in Japan. So that's actually not the problem. But if the restaurant starts trying to like squeeze the employee for a mistake that was made that may or may not have been a mistake. So whenever they talk about wrong orders, I always have this like this just tincture of doubt where I'm like, yeah, but did they give the wrong order, or did they order something and then change their mind? And then when it came, they decided they wanted something else. And that in itself is problematic because there's no actual proof. And the company, the restaurant, whatever, should absorb it. We've had a dozen stories of restaurants closing down after the pandemic because people just aren't going out to restaurants as much. But then there's also the inflation. So people aren't making as much money. So putting this extra burden on an employee who's probably making minimum wage, I think is absolute bullshit. And it's never going to be the high-level employees with lots of money who are actually going to be forced to do any of this stuff. There is a man who was arrested for breaking into 1,000-plus properties for the thrill of it. So this is someone... Okay, I have a related story from when I was a youth, and you know, as soon as I say youth, you know we're talking about bad stuff. He admitted when he was arrested that the reason he was breaking into these properties was the adrenaline rush of would he be spotted. This was his main motivator for breaking into these properties. Now, there's a bit of a conflict here because the story said he broke into someone's home, the 48-year-old husband, when he ran away, when the man got caught and started to run away, grabbed him and restrained him while the wife called the police. She called the police and said, like, my husband's just caught this guy. He was breaking into our place. He's holding him. Please come get him. He was arrested at that point. When he was arrested, he said, I only enter the property, never the actual houses. This was like he was playing this like solo game of hide and seek. Like he was creating a situation where if he got caught, it was like losing the game, but no one else knew they were actually playing, which is, I guess that's where the problem comes in. You can't play hide and seek in someone's house without them knowing and them like just being like, oh, that was fun. We got you. My related story is when I was young in Canada, 17 years old, I don't remember, this was like 16, 17, 18, when you're at your sort of physical peak, but also your dumbest, which is a very interesting combination of things to have. My friends and I used to climb over people's houses. This was a game we created amongst ourselves. There was hedge jumping, and so there was a lot of hedges in Canada where I lived, and it was, could you jump all the way through the hedge, doing a ton of damage, I'm sure. Now that I think about all this, as an adult who owns property, I'm like deeply, deeply disturbed and offended by the stuff we were doing. But the initial part was hedge jumping. Could you jump over the hedge? Could you jump through the hedge? Could you basically throw your body into a hedge? Then, because we never got caught doing it, or we never got in trouble for doing it, we decided to escalate, which is, of course, what a young, testosterone-driven man is going to do. So we decided to escalate into climb over people's garages. Garages tend to be about one story. They're almost an extension to the house. So it was get yourself up onto the roof of the garage, climb over the garage, get into the backyard, get out of the backyard without getting caught. And so there was almost a speed element to this. It was kind of parkour before parkour was a thing. But like on a lower level, we were just climbing. This is, I maybe more like house bouldering. We were doing that. But then, of course, we escalated. And then we would climb up to the second floor, which is usually the roof of the house. So it was, could you climb up onto the roof of the house, climb over the house, climb down the back of the house, get into the backyard and run outside the backyard, or run out through the front again or something without getting caught. And that is as far as I went. I did that a few times. Now, it was very dangerous because you're on a roof and they actually tend to be quite slippery, especially if you're getting to the fall winter season, which is a lot of times when we were bored and outside and when it was very dark for a long period of time. So that's kind of where I maxed out. I got a little scared after that. I didn't want to like fall off the roof of a house. So I did that once or twice and I'm like, you know, I actually have had my thrill. I'm done. I was a fairly conservative young man when it came to my exploitations, if I'm being really honest, but that was a good thing. That saved me from some danger. I had a friend who could not stop escalating. And now when I'm later in life, comparatively speaking, I do wonder what's happened to him, because I know if he lived the life on the trajectory he was going, he's dead by now. Through some very, very exciting event. I don't know if that's good. I don't know if I'm proud of that or not. But if he lived his life the way he was at that time. Now, I calmed down. I changed my life. My attitude changed for sure. So I'm assuming his did as well. But he was always the more extreme of our group. He took to, I never did this. I never could do this. He took to breaking into people's houses, taking a shower, and then leaving. So he would never steal anything or disturb anything. But the thrill of them coming home and knowing that someone else had taken a shower in their house for him was more exciting than actually like stealing something for profit. So he never actually took anything. He never disturbed anything. He would use one towel. He would take a shower, use some of their product. And I mean, it's such a violation. I mean, now I think about it and I'm like, my God, if I came home and I knew someone who was a stranger broke into my house in my shower, that would disturb me for a very, very long time. But I think that's what he was going for. I mean, I lost track of him. He was a very nice guy. It's hard to say anything good or bad because this was a horrible thing. Now that I can say as an adult, if it happened to me, how I would feel. I know how I would feel. It would be awful. But I love this dude. I do hope he's got his shit together and he's a happy, healthy person because he has a lot to offer society. And that sort of attitude directed towards something positive could have been a really great thing. It reminded me of another story we did on Ninja News Japan of the guy who took picture of an idol and then took the reflection from her eye and figured out what station she was at and then kind of triangulated where she lived and stalked her. And I was like, if he used that to track down criminals, like that skill set, that level of detail and that level of ability, if he took that and used that to track down people who'd done bad things, he'd be like a hero in all our eyes. But he had to use it for stalking some idol who he had a para relationship with that wasn't real. So a police officer goes to investigate a possible DUI, so driving under the influence. Sergeant goes to question two men who are sitting in a car in the parking lot of a convenience store. And then they are like, oh, what do we do? This is where I would have done the quiz this week, is like, what is the solution? You probably are drunk. You're in a car. You have X amount of options to stop yourself from getting arrested for this DUI that the cop is clearly walking towards your car. You know he's coming to get you. What do you do? Well, they did the most sensible thing humans could do while under the influence of alcohol. They drove straight at the cop. They accelerate towards the police officer who is walking towards them. The cop ends up on the hood of the car. So he probably did a little jump, ended up on the hood, because the injuries they talked about at the end of the story are actually just some scraped knees. So he probably, his knees hit the hood of the car as he slammed into the hood of the car. And then they kept driving. They drove for 220 meters with the cop clinging to the hood of the car. Now, you know, if someone is clinging to the hood of your car, you have options. You can stop and give up, or you can shake them off, or you can just keep going until they fall. None of those are good options. You're screwed, because if you stop, you're getting arrested for the DUI. And I'm assuming at minimum assault for the police officer. If you keep driving, the fact that he may fall off and get severely injured or die is attempted murder. And so this is actually a story we've done before. We actually had a guy steal 100 yen of coffee out of a convenience store and then get on. And then the clerk, the store worker, jumped on the hood of the car thinking the person wouldn't drive away. Then they did drive away. They got arrested for attempted murder. So driving with someone on the hood of your car in Japan is attempted murder. And it's if they survive, like if they actually fall off and get died, then you're actually down for murder. So 220 meters, the cop clinging to the hood, the cop goes, stop or I'll shoot. So he's clinging to the hood. I'm assuming he has like one or two hands clinging to the car. I don't know what kind of car it was or whatever, but he's saying, if you don't stop, I'm going to pull my gun out and start shooting through the windshield. This is action movie stuff. I don't know. They don't say how fast they were going. I'm very interested in how fast they were going. Realistically, I know they weren't going that fast because I bet they didn't want to kill the cop. But at the same time, they're like, we can't stop. So they're in this sort of dilemma of, we've gone this far. How do we stop? We can't stop. But at the same time, I really don't want to kill a cop. We're just drunk. We're not murderers. So they stop the car. There's no further explanation of injury or anything like that. It's just some scraped knees. So I'm assuming they stop the car. Then the next part of the story that we know is factual is they ran away. So the cops in Japan don't try to shoot you. They don't want to shoot you. So him saying stop or I'll shoot is a very, very serious threat. Like, this is like, you've gone way, way past the line. I'm actually going to pull out my gun and shoot you. When they stop the car and get out, he probably got off the hood of the car and he's like, okay, you guys. And then they start running away and he still didn't shoot them, which again, realistically, is actually the right answer. As much as they just tried to kill him, but also didn't try to kill him, it's not worth them dying to a gunshot in the back. Whereas in other countries, I think the cop might be so pissed they might actually do it. This actually, again, Credit to the police in Japan for showing restraint. They do not shoot people unnecessarily. The passenger turned himself in 2 days later. So we don't know what he's going to be arrested with, because he's sitting in the passenger seat. He may have been saying, stop, stop, stop. He may have been saying like, kill him, kill him, kill him. We don't know. So we don't know what kind of state has actually been taken from this for the passenger. But he's like, look, if I turn myself in now, maybe I get some clemency. Maybe something goes right. I'm not going to get as much trouble. But they're going to try to get him to turn in, of course, on the driver, who is an associate, a friend, I assume. He's being arrested for obstruction of public duties and possible attempted murder. The driver still hasn't been brought in. So the driver, we assume, is going to get attempted murder and maybe more. I want to see how that one ends up. This is a heavy story. So Ninja News Japan and CMIG-B, I did a couple of experimental episodes where I was talking about some murders that happened in Japan. They are Ninja News Japan stories, but I wanted to see how I felt talking about them. And I tend to be quite flippant, and so I was like, I wanted to get the feeling right before I actually brought them into Ninja News Japan. We're going to be doing heavier stories. I just figure I have to give a warning of some sort before the story actually begins. So if you're sensitive to that, there's sort of a trigger warning. I don't know what you would call it in modern days, but I am talking about death. I am talking about murder and stuff at times, but I will give a warning beforehand, or at least until I get into the habit that it happens so regularly that you can just expect that there's going to be this kind of story. But for the moment, I'm going to give you a warning. This one involves suicide and death. So be very, very aware of that before the story begins. They are prosecuting a dead girl for gross negligence resulting in death. So this is a very interesting story because of the legal implications of suicide in Japan when it ends up hurting someone else. She climbed to the 12th story of a building and jumped and then fell and hit a pedestrian, killing both herself and the pedestrian. And the prosecutors want the indictment recorded. And so the big question is, why are you going through the effort of prosecuting a dead girl for a crime when she can't actually be punished for it? Because it's the news, they don't actually give you reasons why they would do this. They just sort of give you the information of what happened. So then I have to extrapolate the reasons for myself. And so I came up with several scenarios because this is setting a precedent should something happen again. So let's say someone throws themselves off a building and hits someone else and they survive. They want the precedent on the records of what should happen to that person. They want, let's say both of them survive, the injured party and the person who attempted suicide. Suicide is illegal in Japan, like it is in a lot of countries. What should the punishment, the recompense, the ability of the other person to sue, all that has to be available, and that is part of the crime to tell you what they can and cannot do in the courts after the fact. So there is the scenario, both die. The family still survives. Maybe they want to sue the building. Maybe they want to sue the family. Maybe they want to sue the government or something else. You need something on record that has actually happened. So you can't just let it go. The building in this case has been protected because they put up a large glass barrier that the girl climbed over. So they want that on record. Like the building has to protect itself in so much, but if they make it easily available, maybe they are culpable for some of the damages. So the family of the victim, the person who got killed by essentially accident, they might be able to sue the building company for having an unsafe building that someone could commit suicide off of. They need to know what they can and cannot do. This would have a lot to do with insurance, I think. The family could sue the building, so that would be a part of the insurance. The family of the victim wants to sue either the building or the other family. The degree of the crime will be important. So that's going to determine how much, you know, recompense you actually get as a result of the court case. But in Japan, probably most importantly, is to dissuade others from doing the exact same thing. It's unlikely that it will actually dissuade someone, because someone in that sort of state of mind, they are not thinking about the legal ramifications of what they're doing, but maybe they do still care about their family. Should someone in Japan commit suicide by throwing themselves in front of a train, which for a very long time was the most common way to do it, the family of the victim gets placed with the burden of paying for the delays. And that is millions and millions and millions of yen, especially if you're in a big city like Tokyo, where it affects thousands and thousands of hundreds of thousands of people. I guess the smaller city, the less the fine, but that actually doesn't sort of assuage it a little bit. It doesn't make it any easier for the family to handle. And this wasn't done to punish the family. This was to try to dissuade other people from putting that burden on their family in the first place, hoping that you care about your family enough that you'll at least not do it this way, which is a very awful way to think about it. But these companies have to think about it in a practical way because they have to deal with the aftermath as well, just as much as anyone else. But because they have to deal with it in a practical way, they have to start thinking about it in a practical way. Unfortunate incident where a girl was suicidal and threw herself off a building has actually been prosecuted for the death that resulted in her landing on someone and actually killing a pedestrian. This is sort of an update to a story, but I stuck it at the end because there's another ass story coming up. So we did a story a few weeks ago about a politician who was campaigning and he got girls wearing really, really small mini skirts. Like you could see the bottom part of their ass cheeks sticking out when they were just standing around normally. Good Lord, if they ever bent over, there would be nothing covering anything. They were wearing hot pants with like fishnet stockings and they were handing out flyers. And everyone was like, this is distracting from the actual politics. This is just like a gambit to try to get people to sort of take his flyer so they'll remember his name. I mean, whether you say it's effective or not, he did not win the seat. So you could actually say that this did not help his campaign as much as he thought it would. He's in trouble for something else. So these girls that he had campaigning on his behalf, first of all, they said, oh, well, this is how I dress. I chose to dress this way. I was not told to dress this way, which I think any reader or listener had their doubts about. If we're being really honest, when you have really hot girls campaigning for a very boring politician, I think there was a conversation of what they should wear and how they should look. I think that's actually fair. Oh, we all agreed on the bright green jacket that represents our candidate, but the incredibly small miniskirt that's going to distract everyone and bring everyone's attention towards me, that was my own choice. Well, it turns out there was more going on than that. He offered 1,500 yen an hour to the campaigners, to these girls who were wearing these miniskirts. In Japan, if you campaign on the behalf of a politician, they cannot give you money. That's actually a crime. So this politician, again, this sort of puts more information into the whole pool here. If he was willing to commit a crime to pay these women to campaign on his behalf, hand out flyers and stuff, and he was willing to pay them, I bet he was willing to cross the line where he was willing to talk about what they should be dressing and wear sexy clothes so that he could get more attention from, I'm assuming, the male audience he was trying to. Now, my brain just went completely dead. I just did 29 minutes. Fairly smoothly once I got started and then just shut down completely on one word where I want to say that he was trying to attract a male audience. There you go. I'll have to edit a big chunk of that out and we'll just get attract a male audience. So there's a lot of suspicions about his morality now. He's clearly using sex to sell, which we all know works, but in this case didn't work. And he's willing to break campaign laws and pay the people who are campaigning on his behalf, which means did these hot girls in miniskirts even support him in the first place? Probably not. I think they were just in it for the money. So I connected this to the end because this is the last story of Ninja News Japan. A man was going, and it's another ass story. So the mini skirts is really, we're talking about girl butts. This is about a man butt. So we have girl, to finish off, we have a set of butts. We have a bookmark of butts to end off the episode, which is very nice. A man was going up an escalator and there was a woman, maybe 19 years old, standing behind him. And he thought, you know what? I really want this woman to see my butt. So he pulled down his pants and exposed his butt to her face. Now, I'm 6 foot and I've realized if I stand 2 steps behind someone, I am almost exactly at ass level. So I'm wondering if he had done that calculation as well. Because I always try to stand 1 up or 3 down, so I'm not staring directly at their ass.
I'm here for the man butts.
You're here for the man butts. I'm glad people are here for butts. That's great. I should stick to my niche. Ninja News Japan. Because I was listening to Rotten Mangoes, which is a true crime podcast. I'd actually been watching this chick on TikTok and didn't realize she had a full podcast.
I'm not sure when mooning someone moves from insult to assault.
You're not sure when mooning someone is assault? I think if you stick something in someone's face, it's assault. I think that's just what it is.
I don't like man butt, but a butt what? Story is a butt
I don't
story.
Like man butt, but man butt is firm butt. Actually, again, I don't know. How did it say the age? I think it said the age and I wrote it. I think he was 48. 48-year-old man butt can go very, very diverse as far as butt goes. I don't know how much butt talk I want to have. Interesting fact. Here's the survey we could have done the quiz, but the Olympics. I actually saw a thing and they were talking about which Olympians have the best butts. And it was a very interesting conversation. It's of course, you're not really supposed to talk about that. But of course, these are the pinnacle of fitness. So therefore, the best butts must be.
And now we learn about
Peter's butt. No, my butt is a struggle. because I hurt my knees, I work on my knees, but that actually means I'm doing a lot of squats and stuff. So I'm assuming my butt is getting slightly better, but it was not great before.
I should have canchoed his butt.
Okay, I'm going to do Concho story first and then do Olympic story and then get back to my story. This is, I don't know how this is going to cut into an episode, but I'm very happy to actually talk to people as opposed to just doing stories. So I've only been Concho'd properly once in Japan. Now, this is something as an English teacher that happens to every English teacher because it's not something they prepare you for. And it's for anyone who doesn't know, a Concho is when you steeple your hands and get your fingers and you get behind someone and you jam your two fingers up their butt. And then you probably shout Concho or something like that. That is an enema. Concho means enema. I have an enema story, but I've told that elsewhere. Again, my very first year of teaching English in Japan, I'm in a room with a bunch of little kids, and then some kid decides, ha ha ha, little bully kid too. He says, I'm going to Concho the teacher. He Conchos me. He shouts, Concho, ha ha ha. I turn around. I have the biggest, heaviest watch ever on my wrist at that point. I've never had anything go up my butt before. So for me, this is a shock. I'm not prepared for this. I didn't want this. I was not in the mood. I turn around real fast because, again, something just went up my butt. My watch that is like 5 pounds, it was the very first Citizen Eco Drive solar power watch. So the battery in there is huge. I turn around and smack that kid in the face, not on purpose. I whap that kid with my watch as hard as humanly possible because I turned around so fast because I was not ready for something to go up my butt. That kid got laid out. He hit the ground and he didn't cry, but he was like in shock, like, holy shit, what just happened to me? I did something I thought would be funny. The other kids would laugh. No one's laughing. Everyone's looking shocked at me. I'm kind of embarrassed. And I got hit in the head. That kid went around and told everyone, if you hit Chunkin Beef Chest Sensei and you concho him, he's going to hit you as hard as he can. And I never got conchoed again. So inadvertently, violence solves problems. I think if you do violence on purpose, it doesn't solve the problem. But if I can turn around and go, that was an accident, I didn't mean to do it. But the kid always is going to have that doubt. That doubt, that seed remains and it grows into the tree of never being conchoed again, which is great. But you got to be sure it's clearly unintentional for violence to be successful. Back to the Olympics, which athlete has the best butts? Because I thought, judo's good because they do an all-round physical thing. But then I was like, it's got to be gymnasts. Like gymnasts just, they work every single muscle so thoroughly. So I was like, but they were looking specifically at butts. So you have to think, what is the most butt-intensive sport in the Olympics? And I'm going to give you a few seconds to think about it and answer in the chat. What do you think?
It's probably powerlifter.
Powerlifters would be good, but you got to think powerlifters, they're working the upper body. They're working...
Hurdles.
Ah.
Shot put.
Hurdles is good. Hurdles is closer. So again, this is not a definitive answer, but the answer they gave was one I wouldn't have thought of, which I thought was a very good answer. So we're going to do that. Hurdles, I think, is better because, again, it's a lot of leg power. And then shot put, I think shot put is as much upper body as lower body. So you're going to get too much of a balance. You got to think just buttocks, just butt. All right. So the answer, I think all these were good answers, but the answer they gave, which I wouldn't have thought of, which I agree with, is fencers, because fencers spend almost all their time exclusively lunging, and lunging works primarily your gluteus maximus. And that is a butt muscle. So they're going to have hard, firm, taut, large, strong, powerful butts. And I was like, yep. I mean, there's lots of sports. Again, I always thought gymnastics because gymnastics just does everything. But then turn around and go, where do you just lunge? You just lunge over and over again for hours and hours and hours. I was like, yeah, I can't actually argue with that. But there's no definitive answer because what butt you like is up to you.
Hot pants, new uniform for fencers, 2028.
We've had a like, half dozen stories on Ninja News Japan in the last little while of they're making athletes' uniforms. That there's cameras that do like heat stuff. I think it's for taking pictures at night. And they want...
But soft butt, good butt.
Oh,
I don't want to grab
a
rock.
No. See, here's the thing. I don't know. Yeah, because personal preference does come into it. I think we're talking visual aesthetic. Because if we're talking about touching, that's a personal preference that goes into a whole other area. But I think if we're just talking about physical aesthetic, yes, I can agree with the sentiment of what they're saying is these are the people who work the most on their butts. Unintentionally even, I think that's even better. Touching it, totally different thing. Although I have always, not like a fantasy, I don't know if I should be talking about this now. I've always actually wanted to get on with a gymnast and just like, is it different? Does it feel different? Because I made out with a girl with a tongue piercing and it wasn't particularly different. I was very disappointed. And I get the feeling it might be the same thing. I have a friend who dated a ballerina and he said like she could literally lift her leg up over her own head and do stuff. And, I was like, that opens a lot of possibilities. But I'm going to do the last story of Ninja News Japan. Then I'm going to move on to the other stuff where you are more than welcome to interrupt and chat. But I do have to get the butt story out. Although we've had now an extra like 10 minutes of butt. So this is going to be a very butt heavy episode, which is good. Because who doesn't like talking about butts? I'm going to recap the story just for anyone who maybe have missed that. The going up the escalator, a man in his late 40s standing up there, and he decides there's a woman who's 19 behind me, and I think she really needs to see my butt today. So he drops his pants, and he sticks her butt in her face. I say that as a bit of color. I don't know if he actually did anything other than just pull his pants down, but this woman is standing behind him, one or two steps behind, I assume, looking essentially directly at his butt. He was very quickly arrested. There's only so much you can do. There are going to be cameras all over a mall. He's in a subway or a mall at this point. There's going to be cameras everywhere. The security guard saw him. The security guard is like, called the police. He's like, that's the guy with the butt. Arrest the butt. When he was arrested, he said, he tried to defend himself because they're like, this is public indecency. You tried to show your bare bottom to a woman who did not want to see it. Now, if she wanted to see it, totally different issue. We're not talk about that. But he states to the police, it was not my intention to show her my butt. I wanted a younger woman to see the T-back underwear I was wearing. So he's saying a T-back underwear is Japanese for a G-string or a thong. He's saying that I wasn't showing her my butt. I was showing her my sexy underwear that I was wearing that she wouldn't have known I was wearing because there were no visible panty lines. So I needed to undress, reduce the amount of cloth in front of her so she could glory in the buttocks and the framing of the T-back underwear that I was wearing that day.
He wanted to show her his G-string. Bullshit.
So I think, weirdly...
And that's somehow better.
Yeah, so Jade just hit my point. I think it's actually worse taking off your pants and showing a G-string versus a just naked butt. I don't know why. I think because you've taken the time to dress it up, that makes it worse. You've taken the time to decorate it and then display it. That shows intent where if I just was going commando and I was like, oh, hot girl behind me, she clearly wants to see my butt and I drop my pants. That would be like, oh, in the moment. But this is premeditated. This is like, I'm going to get up this morning. I'm going to choose my best G-string. I'm going to put that on. It's got maybe some colors to it, you know, up at the top part. And then I'm going to wait and I'm going to on the elevator and I'd be like, here's my not victim, the person who's lucky enough, the lottery winner who gets to see my butt today as dressed up as it has ever been, drops pants and then they get to see that. It's the planning, it's the premeditation. So this is takes it from like level one murder to third degree murder. So like first degree murder is like a moment of passion. Third degree murder is like you made a plan and you executed the plan and that's why it's worse. So he was arrested for breaking the nuisance prevention ordinance of the city, which is basically you're an annoying human being and we're going to arrest you for it, which is a great rule to have. Japan, I hate and love the vagueness of the laws they employ in Japan because the vagueness of the laws means it's sometimes very hard to tell if something's okay, but it also in a situation like this where a man is not technically naked, he is still responsible for the fact that he did this thing that grossed everyone out. Oh, I have to use a French accent. I don't know if I can do that. We have finished the episode for today. Let me finish the Ninja News Japan theme song. Let me put that on for you right now. Okay, so that is the episode of Ninja News Japan. I would like to thank everybody who came here today for the addition. I was about, alternatively, his pants came out to his nipples or something. I think he was... So again, there is a fault on the police officer. They don't give you enough description, enough intent, enough detail for me to be happy, to be satisfied. Because what I want to know is, what was he wearing? Was he wearing track pants like I would on my day off? Was he wearing business clothes? Did he have to undo his belt? How much of a process was it for him to take the belt off and put it down so the woman could see his thong to thong thong thong? That is the information I want, and it is never the information that is in the article. I want the newspaper man. I want the police officer to give me a more detailed story.
I hope they reenacted the crime like they do on the news sometimes.
I would love... See, this is it. This is the problem with a tiny, tiny independent show like mine is what NT Beast just said. I would love to do that. If I could get enough money to pay a computer animator person to do like a cartoon of my version of the story, it'd be fucking hilarious. It would be awesome, but I can't get to do it. I do have to stop the French accent. The French accent and all that other stuff was really just for video game time. I don't know if I can throw it into podcast time because I am usually trying to get through something.